Hello, everyone. I'm Bruce Stocking, along with Corinne Lillis, Gary Porter, and later on, Sam Rohr. It's Friday, August 22nd, 2014, and you're listening to We the People, Constitution Matters. We the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. This is Bruce Stocking, host of a new show. And that new show is We the People that you're listening to on 1180 AM WFYL. This is a program in which we are examining the Constitution of the United States, various elements of that Constitution, trying to create a better understanding of that document. And as I've said many times, we're doing this in a realm in which we don't use the political spin that has been used in manipulating of the document and the wording of the document. The document itself is being examined as it was written. The original intention of the Constitution, of course, was for the common man could read and understand this document. And the document serves as a blueprint and a rule book as to what can and cannot be done by the federal government. Such things are the document as the Constitution itself, the first 10 amendments, which are known as the Bill of Rights. And last weekend we talked extensively about the 17th Amendment of the Constitution, which I personally feel is the major cancer in our government, because that amendment took the appointment of senators away from the state. In other words, took the state's voice away in participating in the government and turned the election of and selection of senators over to the populace, the people. The Constitution laid out that the Congress would consist of the House of Representatives originally that were voted in by we the people, and the Senate would be placed under the states to appoint their representatives. That way they all would have a say in the government. But the 17th Amendment has disrupted that and changed the whole dynamic, and which has created a lot of the governmental procedure problems that we deal with today, especially a division or one-party rule of the government itself. Later on in the program, when Sam Rohr joins us, we're going to be talking a little bit more on the 17th Amendment. He has very strong views about that amendment of the Constitution. But we're going to lead off the program speaking on the 16th Amendment. The 16th Amendment of the Constitution was ratified on February 3rd of 1913. And what does that amendment do? That creates an income tax, and we all know the income tax, and April 15th comes around with a joint sigh throughout the nation. And we're going to examine taxation and the 16th Amendment, and to do that, of course, we're going to have Gary Porter, who's going to be joining us to deal with the 16th Amendment and get the ball rolling on that. So we're going to do a twofold. We're going to talk 16th Amendment, 17th Amendment, the finish up 17th Amendment. These are two very important amendments of the Constitution, which affects all of us, we the people. And, of course, this program is We the People. So,
I want to quick welcome Gary again to our program, as always, each week.
Morning, Corinne and Bruce.
Gary, how are you doing this morning?
Excellent.
I didn't catch that. What was that?
Excellent.
Excellent. All right. Well, we're getting a little rain up here. How's it down your way?
Perfect. The perfect day.
We don't want to hear that.
Well, so I should check the weather in your area before I call in each Friday?
Well, you don't have to, but you know, as I always say in our program during the week when I do the weather, is that you can guarantee one thing: down in Washington, there's always a snow job going on.
There you go.
There it is. Well, Gary, of course, Sam will be joining us a little bit later, and I do want to do a little house cleaning on our discussion that we had with the 17th Amendment. Chuck Proctor isn't with us today. We've given him the day off, so it's going to be Corinne, myself, you, and Sam Rohr will be joining us. So when Sam joins us, we might bounce to the 17th a little bit. But I want to get the ball rolling on taxation. The 16th Amendment, of course, you did a piece recently that deals with a little bit of the history of the 16th Amendment. And if you give us a little, a preamble for the 16th Amendment, let's call it.
Well, the 16th Amendment is certainly infamous because most people believe it it took off all controls that were in the Constitution on how Congress could lay taxes. And the words of themselves certainly give you that impression. The Congress shall have power to lay and collect taxes on incomes from whatever source derived without apportionment among the several states and without regard to any census or enumeration. Now, I've been having some discussions about the 16th for the last couple of weeks, and one of my friends, David Whitney, is going to join us next week, I believe.
Yes. In fact, next week we're going to have a full house here for the program because it'll be your Corinne and myself, yourself, Sam Rohr, Chuck, and David Whitney. That'll be a power-packed hour, that's for sure.
Indeed. And there's still new information that is coming to my attention about the 16th. Some that I haven't fully digested and not really ready to discuss yet.
Okay.
But The main thing that the 16th did was that it removed any restrictions that were previously in place on the source of income that could be taxed directly without apportionment. And people have taken that to mean that the Congress can now tax your income from whatever source and however derived, and you just have to basically take it.
just shut up, sit down, and eat it, that's for sure. Well, tell you what, before we get going too much into it, a lot of our folks out there may not be familiar so much with the 16th Amendment. Of course, they are familiar with the hand that they constantly feel in their pocket. Mm-hmm. But, Corinne, could you read the 16th Amendment for our listeners?
Yes. It says, "The Congress shall have power to lay and collect taxes on incomes from whatever source derived, without apportionment among the several states, and without regard to any census or enumeration."
Talk about being thrown the keys of the kingdom to run wild. That's what it sounds like to me. What do you think, David? I mean, Gary.
Well, exactly. Now, there's a couple things to point out. Many of the constitutional amendments point to specific places in the Constitution which they are amending.
Mm-hmm.
Specific clauses, specific words. This one doesn't. If you notice, this doesn't make any reference to Article 1, Section 8, Article 1, Section 9, Article 1, Section 2, any of the places where taxation is mentioned. This says, here's the power that you're going to give the Congress should you ratify this amendment.
Yeah.
So that's important to keep in mind. That it makes it a little more muddier in terms of understanding exactly what its effect will be. I mean, if it had said, this amendment changes Article 1, Section 8 to read XYZ, then it'd be very clear as to the effect of the amendment. But this makes no reference to any original sentences in the original Constitution.
Well, considering the way things tend to go in the government, and, of course, a lot of things that we hear today, people shake their heads. But in actuality, this type of chicanery has been going on for quite a while. And I'll ask the very loaded question here. Do you think that was intentional?
Well, quite. There were efforts to tax income during the Civil War to pay off Civil War debt or to pay for the war itself, and those were far-reaching. And the Supreme Court, in the Pollock case, said, "Wait a minute! Now you can't have this unrestrained power to tax." So the Pollock case took some of the sources of income away from the federal government. And anytime anytime you take something away from the federal government, the government's going to react like a spoiled baby and say, we got to find a way to get that back.
Yeah, well, you know, it's like playing a game of Monopoly with somebody, and they make up the rules as they go along on this thing.
Exactly. Now, you mentioned chicanery just a moment ago, and that's part of this whole sordid tale of the 16th, is the chicanery that took place in ratifying the document.
Mm-hmm.
As I brought out in my essay, there is a process that is supposed to be followed when you ratify an amendment to the Constitution.
Right.
And that we pride ourselves as being a nation of laws, and the rule of law holds supreme. And if we're going to follow procedures, there's a reason for doing that. And when we don't, then there's problems. And in the case of ratifying the 16th Amendment, there were problems.
Mm-hmm.
It gives you the impression when you just look at the facts that the amendment was not ratified properly. And, well, Congress is not going to take no for an answer. And so despite these problems with the ratification instruments, Congress just declared that it was, in fact, ratified.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going to send out an amendment to be ratified and you expect a certain return, then hold yourself to that. Don't just say, well, we'll take whatever we get back.
Right.
So let me give you an example. If we say there's going to be an amendment that all men must wear green shirts on Tuesday, okay, we send that amendment out to the states, and some of the states send us back an amendment that they say they ratify that says all men must wear red shirts on Tuesdays. Now, was that a ratification of the amendment that we sent out? No, clearly it changed the meaning of the amendment that was proposed.
Well, it's almost like the form of what was done with the Unaffordable Care Act, where you pass the law itself, and then HHS came around and made up rules that throw on that law.
Yes, that's another issue that needs to be discussed, because that's a delegation of legislative authority that the Congress does not have but uses regularly.
Well, you know, again, for our listeners, with the taxation, we read what the 16th Amendment is, but what is it? Article 1, and that would be Section 8 of the Constitution that deals with taxation. And Corinne, if you want to go over that one and maybe bring things into perspective a little
bit,
we're talking.
It reads, "The Congress shall have power to lay and collect taxes, duties, imposts and excises to pay the debts and provide for the common defense and general welfare of the United States. But all duties, imposts, and excises shall be uniform throughout the United States."
Yeah, there's a couple of points there, Gary, that really stand out to me. One is, of course, to pay for war debt. And what you mentioned in your article as well, the War of 1812 was one of those that come in there, and it never really went anywhere. But it's duties and tariffs, and it's for the defense. And there's nothing mentioned in there so much as far as what the 16th Amendment will bring in.
Well, remember that says provide for the common defense and general welfare of the United States.
Well, there's the interpretation. What does general welfare mean?
Exactly. Well, that's one of those clauses that has been, and what one of those terms that has been stretched beyond imagination. And James Madison made it very clear. This was an issue that came up in the very first Congress. What is the general welfare,
mm-hmm.
and what is specific welfare? And he said, you know, if general welfare means, if the word general welfare, the phrase general welfare, means doing anything that in any way affects the welfare of the United States, then you've got a Constitution with no limits.
Yeah,
you don't have a Constitution with carefully enumerated powers. So that can't possibly be what we intended.
No, in fact, I would maybe I speculate too much here, but the fact of general welfare, would that not fit into what was described in the Declaration of Independence, life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness?
Well, if you want to take it that broadly, go ahead, but I don't think that's what was intended.
Okay.
General welfare has to apply to everybody,
mm-hmm.
to be general. That is, it can't be just specific welfare for specific groups. And that's the biggest problem with the general welfare clause, is the government is taking money ostensibly for the general welfare of the United States, but then is divvying it out to favored groups.
Mm-hmm. But
specifically,
but that, then when you get into the balance of say, and which, boy, here we are, we're touching back again on the 17th Amendment, where you know, you had the states had a say in those days, as well as the people had a say in those days, and of course, this could also, would this also be, and as Chuck Proctor pointed out last week, the closeness between these two amendments, one in February of 1913, that's the 16th Amendment, and then the 17th Amendment in April of 1913, is almost, one could kind of look at this and go, gee, the 17th Amendment is enacted to help support the skullduggery of the 16th.
Well, they were both a result of a new progressive movement that was going on in the country at that time. And you know, progressives, God bless them, they want to do a lot of good, but they don't generally have enough money to do it, so they need funds.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, and that, of course, is the real rub thing. One thing I noticed in your article is where you were mentioning about and I'll quote a little bit here. Civil War, Congress passed a Revenue Act of 1861, which levied a flat tax of 3% on annual income above $800. Flat tax, we've heard that talked about again.
Well, I think a lot of people see that as a remedy to this absolutely convoluted tax structure we have right now, where you have to hire an expert to make sure that you get all the breaks that you're due.
Mm-hmm.
The tax code now has become so voluminous that it cannot be understood by the common person.
Yeah, exactly. Now, Corinne, you were showing me something, a breakdown of monies paid out in taxes.
Yeah, this is from the National Priorities Project, and they do this every year for the year where your taxes went, broken up by the dollar. So if you had $1, what percent of that dollar went to what? And 27%... 27 cents of the dollar went to the military, 22.7 cents went to health care, 13.9 cents went to interest on federal debt, 9.8 cents went to unemployment and labor. We had 5 cents went to veterans' benefits, 5 cents went to food and agriculture, 4 cents housing and community, 4.5 cents the government, 2 cents went to education, 1.9 cents went to energy and environment, 1.5 cents went to international affairs, 1.4 cents went to transportation, and then finally, 1.1 cent of that dollar went to science.
I guess a whole new meaning of nickel-diming you, does it not?
Right, it certainly does. And
the big one was healthcare up there, and military too, but and also the third one that came up was interest on federal debt. So yeah. Not just paying off the federal debt, just going to the interest.
Now, in a general type of discussion, which you know, anybody that vaguely familiar with things of the Constitution and taxation, and when you come right down to it, besides paying what debts that are incurred, war debts, they talk about the defense, that taxation originally established for the defense. Am I correct on that?
The common defense is the phrase, yes.
Yeah. And, you know, which makes a lot of sense. And, of course, we see nowadays when our tax dollars are not going so much to defense, what happens to that. But, you know, perhaps you can provide a little bit of a step, how this came about based off of what the article, the original article was to the amendment itself, that you do in your piece that you wrote here. You start off with Congress during the War of 1812 for a tax on income, but it was never implemented. Maybe start there a little bit for folks can follow a little bit of a timeline.
Well, the issue is direct taxes or indirect taxes. In Article 1, Section 2, Clause 3, it says representatives and it says direct taxes shall be apportioned among the several states by their respective numbers. In other words, it must be proportional to your population in the state. Indirect taxes never had that kind of a restriction. So the But keep that in mind, that direct taxes and indirect taxes have to be held, have to be dealt with differently. Direct taxes must be apportioned. Now, the 16th Amendment took away that that restriction, and there now you can you don't have to apportion income taxes or really any kind of taxes by state population. But when the Revenue Acts of 1861 and 1862 were initiated, one was a flat tax, one was a proportional or progressive tax. Both those were dealt with by the, well, neither one was dealt with by the Supreme Court, but the issue of taxation was eventually dealt with for the first time with the Pollock decision, and that was based on an 1894 revenue bill. And that tried to gather taxes based on property, income from property, and the Pollock decision basically said that, no, you can't do that. Income from property has to be a has to be proportioned by population. So the Pollock decision basically is very narrow in its scope, but a lot of people have looked at it in a much broader way.
Gary and Bruce, I have a question for both of you. I just out of curiosity, will we ever be able to get rid of an income tax, or is it not possible and there will always be an income tax?
Well, Gary, go ahead.
My opinion is that you'll never get rid of the income tax, yeah. But there's certainly ways to make it fairer. Right now, 43% of Americans do not pay any income tax.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that doesn't mean they don't pay tax, because you know taxes are ubiquitous. We pay taxes on sales and gas and liquor, and we pay taxes of all kinds, payroll taxes. We pay the corporate taxes that corporations are assessed because they just pass those taxes on to us in the terms of the price of the things we have to buy. So everybody pays taxes, but 43% of Americans pay no income tax because of the various rules that we have set up in the income tax system. So, you know, that's not entirely fair, is it, that 57% of the Americans are funding through their income taxes the other 43% who benefit from the general welfare we just discussed.
Yeah, well, exactly, and I agree with you on that. You know, I always equate with the federal government, once they get their mitts on your money, it's like a drug addict, and they just can't get off the junk. And, you know, the junk being the money that we earn. Of course, I'm a big proponent of the fact of get away with the income tax there and go with, I guess it would be considered like the flat tax on purchasing and that, because people are always going to purchase. And that way, considering it was originally laid out to be, and I, you know, they used the word fair, and now it, you know, immediately jumped on not to be fair, that would be a little bit more fairer distribution on there. But I've also noticed what you write about after the American Civil War is when really the quote-unquote the rich fat cats became a target of a lot of people on there. So in other words, we get into taxing the rich more than anybody else, and the whole system just seems to go fluey. And as I always say, when's the last time that a poor man gave another man a job?
Right. Well, as you point out, the 16th Amendment really was focused on corporate taxes. President Taft, who proposed it, proposed a 2% income tax on corporations.
Mm-hmm.
This was an attempt to break up monopolies and to to go for the wealth was being accumulated, but after the tax or after the amendment got ratified, that we kind of forgot about that initial focus, and now it's applied across the board to every income that can be conceived from any source.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, and this I don't know, for myself, I tend to look at, well, you know, that original structure, and you hear a lot of talk about reforming tax code and so forth, is to go on that, but it's the procedure which it's being relayed out there. And yet, as you rightly so point out, not everyone is paying taxes in this country. We hear it also from our elected employees saying that, but yet we don't hear any solution towards the situation with it based on the Constitution. And, of course, we have a few minutes. You know, what do we have left in our hour? We have about 30 seconds left before we go to break. But when we come back, we're going to be joined by Sam Rohr. I want to get into a little bit more with this, Gary, as far as, you know, the procedure that went through that kind of snuck this amendment in without really we the people having a voice in this, various things of that, and then we'll catch up with Sam on his on the 17th Amendment. So a lot more to come, folks. Another half of the program just on the other side of the break here. You're listening to We the People, Constitution Matters. I'm Bruce Stocking, and we'll be right back after this break. All right, that was a quick little break, gave us all a breather there, and you're listening to We the People, Constitution Matters here on 1180 AM WFYL. It's Friday, August 22nd, 2014. And today's topics, well, we've been talking with Gary Porter about the 16th Amendment of the United States Constitution, which something we all know well. We may not know all of it, the details, but we do know April 15th, tax day, income tax. The fact is that when you work, you work so many months at the beginning of the year before you start actually being able to keep some of your money because of the income tax. And we've been dealing with how this came about. We're going to be joined in a few minutes by Sam Rohr. And Sam Rohr is the president of the Pennsylvania and American Pastors Network, former state legislator. And we're going to also kind of backtrack a little bit from last week when Sam gets here with the 17th Amendment, which is dealing with the Senate and the appointment of senators. And a lot of stuff to go over, folks. And Gary, just before the break, we were talking with the 16th Amendment. And you had mentioned in our first segment that the amendment came through and ratified through, shall we say, not in a procedural way, but in a little bit different way. Maybe you can talk a little further on that.
Well, yes. It's important to realize the Constitution doesn't contain any procedures itself on how it is to be ratified. So we have to look elsewhere for a procedure, a rule of law on how to ratify a proposed amendment. And there are procedures that have kind of been set in place over time. The Office of the Federal Register is charged with the responsibility of carrying out the ratification, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
So Congress proposes an amendment. It must be passed by two-thirds vote in each House, not necessarily the full House, but of the members present on that day, two-thirds vote.
Okay.
And then it's sent to the states. Now, the states have to take it up, argue it, discuss it, and if they agree that it should be ratified, then there's an instrument that they send back to the government that says, here's what we ratify.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's a paper that I would refer people to called Defects in Ratification of the 16th Amendment. You can easily find this on the Internet if anybody wants the gory details. But there's adequate evidence to suggest that the amendment was not properly ratified. There were all sorts of problems with that process in being followed specifically. Signatures were missing. Wording changes in the amendment itself were returned to Washington. And
I noticed that when what you wrote about is that when it got returned back before went finalized process, they changed the wording, which would then justify sending it back. Oh, you know, it's just like a contract. Before you sign it, you reread it.
Absolutely. But these procedures that you and I would take for granted, that we need to clarify this, what did you really ratify, those were not followed.
Mm-hmm.
At least one state revoked their previous ratification. Now, is that allowed? If a state decides that we made a mistake in ratifying this and we revoke our ratification, should that be allowed?
No.
So, well, in this case, in the case of the 16th, there was great pressure to get this amendment passed. And so all these little defects and inconsistencies were overlooked, and Congress declared that this was, in fact, ratified.
Mm-hmm. And of course, when you were talking about this, in the state ratification, let's call it, the process for ratification, it's done through the state legislators. But yet, on the state level, are they not to bring it to the people of the state? The fact where you have a special voting referendum or that, where the people can vote on this thing and get their feeling on it before they act? Or is this
There's nothing in the Constitution that requires that. So if that is going to be done at the state level, that must be spelled out in the state constitution or in state laws.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, with this procedure that sounds like the Unaffordable Care Act getting pushed through, if with this procedure that they basically violated to bring this thing into the forefront, why didn't anybody catch this? This sounds like a Harry Reid project.
Well, I don't know at the time how much of this was public knowledge. I doubt that much of it was.
Yeah, I mean,
this was in-house. You know, the Office of the Federal Register gets these documents back from the states, and they probably point out to someone in Congress that, hey, we've got this problem here, we don't have a signature, or the wording was changed, and whether that becomes common knowledge or not, I doubt it. Mm-hmm. So the American people don't have an opportunity to weigh in on this issue if it doesn't come to their attention.
So literally, right alone, right there, a violation of the Constitution.
Right.
Totally incomplete.
It is. Let's go to the first three words.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I think you allude to that, to the fact that you put down in your piece here, the Constitution or no Constitution, sadly, a government of the people, by the people, and for the people no longer exists. And that brings us into the realm in which we're now in the 21st century, and this has become standard operating procedure to the most part, correct?
Exactly. And I'd like to bring out saying by John Stuart Mill, I think is very apropos here.
Mm-hmm.
He said, I don't have the exact date he said this, but he lived from 1806 to 1873, so probably in the Civil War, just prior to the Civil War time period. A people may prefer a free government, but if from indolence or carelessness or cowardice or want of public spirit, they are unequal to the exertions necessary for preserving it, if they will not fight for it when directly attacked, they are more or less unfit for liberty.
Yeah.
And I think that's what the situation we face today. People are not willing to fight for their liberty.
Yeah, it's kind of like just sit back. Well, you know, and you've heard it. We've all heard it. And, you can't fight City Hall. And, you know, the defeatist attitude of that. But these folks have to realize is that they created City Hall. They put the people in that City Hall who are doing this to them.
Exactly.
Now, you also point out in your article the fact that it has been challenged on various things with this amendment, and courts won't take it up. Why do you think that is?
Well, I don't know why the courts have decided that this is a settled issue, that the fact of the ratification. Once the Secretary of State proclaims it to be ratified, or Congress proclaims it to be ratified, they think that settles the issue. But they have not been willing to take up the issue and examine the process by which it was ratified. I can't explain that.
Yeah, it sounds very similar to what Jefferson in his writings wrote about with laws, and where he mentions nullification. And every attempt at a form of nullification of the laws seems also to either have been totally defeated in the courts, or the courts simply won't hear it. So, therefore, once again, the right of the people in a legal sense of due process, or to point out foul, is being taken away. And then kind of the seal to deal, again, here I am, right back on the 17th Amendment, jumps in to make sure that you have that control.
Well, I hope we can return in a future session to this issue of ratification process, because it, in the case of the 14th Amendment, as I mentioned, it is really, really terrible. And the people need to realize that there are people in government who want to have their way.
Mm-hmm.
Little things like rules that get in the way necessarily have to be overlooked because that will prevent them from getting their way.
Right, right. And, you know, for some, you know, I find it, maybe I'm thinking, you know, trying to think more on the common guy on the street, the guy driving to work right now is listening to this type of thing, is that why would they go through such a constitution, such a document laying out the ground rules, the do's and don'ts of government, people having control of the government, and quite literally, we mentioned a little bit last week about with John Adams, and which he pushes through the Alien and Sedition Act, especially the Sedition Act on there, which is a pure violation of the Constitution. They were attempting to violate and skirt this thing from the get-go, and quite literally you could say, I have a pen and I have a phone and I'm going around Congress. And, you know, they've been playing this game. It's just mind-boggling to me.
Well, everybody wants things to be clean and neat, and sometimes they aren't. And so when they aren't, in an attempt to make them clean and neat, sometimes we are willing to just overlook rules and procedures that are put in place for a good reason.
Yeah.
In the case of the Alien Sedition Acts, you know, I have a hard time understanding why John Adams, who through his writings clearly comes out to be a patriot and understands the real nature of government, or the real purpose for government, why he would propose the Sedition Act particularly. That's the most egregious of the two. I just can't fathom it. But we go back to the phrase we've heard it a thousand times, that power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. You know, that could be in play here.
Yeah, very much. I mean, the more with this program that we're examining this document and you know, the intention of the document and then what has been done literally by the very people that wrote the document, the change the document on there, precisely, you know, and this brings up the case, not to get too far off the playing field for today, but where a lot of folks are talking about, well, this is a prime case for term limits. And I think in our first program, you pointed out the fact that there is nothing in the Constitution and any of the laws and regulations that the Congress has to be there every month. Is that it's a certain times that they be there, and then they go back to a real life of working and things like that.
Well, you know, today's Congress is very different from the first Congresses. Madison and the others thought that the Congress would get together once or twice a year and work for a very specific, defined time to get the work of the nation done, and then they'd go home.
Mm-hmm.
Well, today there's just, quote, so much to do that we now get upset when Congress even takes a break.
Yeah. Well, of course, then again, when we're dealing with a lot of them, it's with what they haven't done in the past 6 years. It has basically been a paid break is what they've been getting. But getting on, again, with the income tax, of course, as we pointed out, the fact is that taxation for the defense of the country, the quote-unquote general welfare of the country, and there's, of course, administrative costs that go into managing the government as it is. But as Corinne was pointing out, with the breakdown of the money, and you listen to a lot of the different things that she was pointing out, where the money goes, there's a lot of things in there that you look at. Do we need, you know?
Yeah, what would be the most concerning about that, do you think?
Yeah, to you, Gary. What's your thoughts on that one?
Well, I don't have any issue with the breakdown of how money is spent in these broad categories. But I always get really upset when who is it? Which Senator? Tom Coburn,
mm-hmm.
each year comes out with his
The waste book, yes.
Yes, the pork book.
Yeah.
The pork book. That's what gets my dander up when I see how frivolous our government spends our money on these projects.
And what type of projects would that be? Just
well, you know, examining the mating habits of the shrimp, the freshwater shrimp.
Oh, I actually liked the shrimp on the treadmill myself. I thought that one was kind of
excellent. Yes. Now, when I read that, you know, my blood pressure goes up about 50 points. But
yeah,
I don't understand why everybody doesn't have that same reaction. And then I realize nobody else reads this stuff except me. I mean, apparently.
Yeah.
You know, if people were more aware and more involved and connected with their government, they would get upset at this stuff, and they would basically march on Washington until it was stopped.
Yeah.
But they don't. They don't involve themselves. They don't remain informed, and so this all happens out of their view.
Yeah, exactly. Let me just cut in for a second. We were expecting to have Sam Rohr join us on the program today, but I guess we've had some little difficulties in getting things through to get him here. So don't know if we're going to have Sam for the last 10 minutes of the program. So it's just going to be Corinne, myself, and Gary here, and we'll just continue our conversation on the 16th Amendment, the income tax, put it bluntly, 16th Amendment income tax. And when Sam joins us, hopefully we can get him on for next week. We'll have a full plate next week, too.
We do. Yeah, we have a full house.
But with the fact on this, and, of course, everybody's got some suggestions, and I'm very much a constitutionalist, as you are, and that this is a republic that is for the people, by the people. And the people need to start making noises on this stuff. Hopefully with this program, we're educating them, enlightening
them. And how would people make noises about this stuff? Bruce and Gary, question for you both.
Well, Gary, your thoughts on that one. And, of course, I'm pretty hardcore, but go ahead.
if I were king, this is the way I'd do it. I would make Tom Coburn's pork report, his annual report, sent to every American in the mail every year.
Mm-hmm.
And they would have no excuse then for saying, well, I didn't know.
Well, and why couldn't that be done? Why can't we do that? Why isn't that happening already?
Well, my goodness, it's going to cost money.
Yeah. Well, another thing that goes with that, too, is that every year the Congress is supposed to present a budget, and it's supposed to be presented in whatever venue they're going to use for public review as well. When's the last time that happened? Well, let me put it, when's the last time they passed a budget?
Well,
Yeah, it's so long ago, I think our grandparents are talking about it.
To address Corinne's question there, why isn't it done? Well, in today's email environment, it could be done very easily.
Yes,
you know, that's true.
I mentioned it's going to cost a lot of money. Well, not really. The document itself, you can download it from the internet. It's a PDF document, and so anybody could get this.
If you put it up on social media, a lot of people would see that.
Oh, sure. But when they open this document up and they see just how wasteful the government is with our money, I just can't imagine people not reacting to this and demanding a change.
Well, you know, this is another thing that really surprises me with a lot of folks. You know, we're all kind of like-minded with that. We can't imagine how people wouldn't be upset about that.
Mm-hmm.
But then when you see some of the, even on a local level in government, the waste and spending that you can actually physically see right in front of you, and they're kind of like, well, you know, that's what they do. That's
yeah.
what they do, and it's the change that perception around of people that, hey, it's your wallet. I've often said,
yeah.
and the government knows this, you want people's attention, you hit them in the wallet. And this hits them in the wallet, but I guess it's hit so much in the wallet that it's like any injury, sports injury, you get hit repeatedly in the same injured shoulder, let's say, after a while you don't feel it.
Well, I'm sure the 43% who are not paying income taxes are saying, well, I don't have to worry about this wasteful spending because that's not my money. I'm not paying income tax.
No, but they're getting from it, though.
Well, they're getting from it, but they're forgetting the other taxes that they pay, that we all pay.
Yeah.
So nobody's exempt from this. It affects us all. It ought to incense us all, and it doesn't. We're more interested in who's on Dancing with the Stars this week.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And, you know, with this, the, you know, what I mentioned at the beginning of the program, gee, do you think this was pre-planned to kind of sneak this in under the door? And which is very evident that it was snuck in under the door on this one. So people are totally taking, you know, the government is totally taking advantage of the people with our money. And I think that's the key issue with everything, is people have to realize this is our money. And to say, like, rob the fruits of one's labor unjustifiably, without a say in there, totally takes everything that we talk about in this program, everything this country is about, just kind of throw it away. Just kind of throw it away. Might as well just start an oligarchy on that.
Yeah, exactly. Well, our view of government has changed over the years. You know, in 200 years ago when the Constitution was being ratified, our view of government was very different than it is today. Today we look at every problem, big to little, and we say, government, fix this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't look for local solutions. We don't look for church solutions. We don't look for community solutions. We say, government, here's a problem. Fix it.
Yeah.
We don't care how much it costs.
Yeah, quite literally, as a nation, as a people.
Right, and as Jefferson points out in the Declaration of Independence, that is not the role of government.
No.
The role of government is to secure our liberties, to secure our rights.
Well, and he also goes on to say, which I think applies very much to the document, what we've been talking about, that the enforcement of the laws are more important than the making of them.
Yes.
Right.
And so what we're dealing with here is an old case, nothing new, that like going on today, where we're not going to enforce so much the laws that we have in the law of the land, the Constitution, but we're going to make new ones to dump into this, and we're not even going to follow the procedure that's prescribed for the fair way of adding and subtracting an amendment to this great document. We're just going to kind of play this game and get it in and go happy about our lives. So everything, you know, if you go by Monticello, if you go by Montpelier, you go by any of the homes and the final resting places of a lot of these founding fathers, you're going to hear a rumble in the ground, and it's got to be them spinning in their coffins.
Yes, it has to be.
You know,
the American people just have to make some decisions here. If they want a free government, if they want freedom, they're going to have to fight for it.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are people who are ready and willing to take away those rights and freedoms.
Yes. And unfortunately, it's the very people that we hire into these offices that are pursuing and proceeding down that path.
Yep. People have to realize that this Constitution is not the government's Constitution.
Yeah.
It is their Constitution. We the people. It is theirs. Individually, they need to take ownership of it.
Absolutely. And, well, you know, besides listening to this program, which is an excellent way to begin that process, what other things would you suggest, hinting at the fact that you have certain resources and things available for people to look at as well?
Well, I'm sorry to say this, but listening to this program is not going to make someone a constitutional expert.
No, but it might wake them up.
Yeah. But there are resources out there. There are online courses that are free of charge. Hillsdale College has excellent online free courses on the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence. There are YouTube videos out there that will teach you. There are books out there like the Heritage Guide to the Constitution, the best expository I could ever recommend. It is not a lack of resources that keeps us from understanding the Constitution. It is a lack of motivation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it's the wallet usually is the big motivator. But like I said, it's been tapped so much and so taken that I think we've got a numbness around that injury.
I think a lot of the motivation has to start in the schools, too. I don't think it should solely be the schools, but I think that really just implementing how important it is to know these things, starting from a young age, I think, because you know, if you get into your routine of life and you go on and all of a sudden you're in college and you're graduated and you realize you never knew much about it or really didn't care, then it's like, oh, well, I mean, if I had known this was so serious so early on, it wouldn't have been, I wouldn't have to start from the beginning at such a late age.
Well, and I'm glad you brought up education, because our public schools are not doing us any favors in promoting a genuine understanding of the Constitution or the efforts that our founders went through to get us the kinds of freedoms we enjoy today. They're just not. In fact, there's a concerted effort to change that dialogue in the public schools.
Yeah, well, you know, it's the old thing. We found this out with Nazi Germany and the Hitler Youth. You start maturing them and training them in the way you want them and mold them when they're young, then they fall in line when they're older.
Right. Our kids today are being taught to embrace progressivism and socialism. And when they graduate from high school, they are, in fact, little socialists. Unless they've gone through homeschooling or Christian schooling, they don't have the founders' view of government or law.
Absolutely. Well, Gary, another fast hour has gone by.
Yeah.
What I would like to do, if you're up for this, next week we're going to have a regular powerhouse here on the program. We're going to have yourself, Corinne, and myself. Charles Proctor will be back. Hopefully we'll get Sam back on here. And we're going to also include David Whitney in on this. I want to continue our discussion on the 16th Amendment, and which piggyback and clean up on the 17th Amendment as well. So gets like David and Sam's thoughts on that. It seems to be all interlocked, but... Gary, I'd like to thank you. It was good talking to you today. We look forward to speaking to you next week. And this has been We the People, Constitution Matters. I'm Bruce Stocking.
And I'm Corinne Lillis.
And we have thoroughly enjoyed spending this Friday morning with you. And in fact, we liked it so much, I think we'll be back next week.
Yes.
From 7 to 8 o'clock here on 1180 AM WFYL. We the People, Constitution Matters. Have a good weekend.